your New Testament and open up to Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1. As you open up the Gospels, these are the simple stories about what God did in bringing Jesus into the world. Before you get to Luke's story, you've got thousands of years of Old Testament history. God had been making a promise from the very beginning when He had promised Adam and Eve that of Eve's offspring would come one that would defeat Satan. And years later, He renewed that promise to Abraham that it would be through Abraham's seed that all nations of the earth would be blessed. When David got to be king, 1,000 years before the time of Jesus, God again made a promise that this offspring of Abraham would be the offspring of David. And he would be this great king that would rule forever over everybody. And after that, Israel hit their problem years. And because they rejected God and had forgotten God, He destroyed their country and their nation. He actually had them ruled over by the Babylonians. And then, unheard of in the history of the world, God renewed them as a people. And He brought them back from the Babylonian captivity and He put them back in their land. This was such an unheard of story that Ezekiel talked about it as the valley of dry bones. A valley filled with just white, bleached out bones. And that God would take those bones and raise them up and put the flesh back on them. For a nation to become a nation again is basically that difficult. But God did that. And they rebuilt their temple and they had settled down into the land. But they really didn't do much better than they had all the way through the Old Testament. And so God sent one last prophet unto them in the book of Malachi. And Malachi told them that there was coming a great and notable day of the Lord. And that before that day came, God was going to send His messenger. And this messenger would come before the Lord. And then a surprising thing happened. At that point in history, God simply did not send any more prophets. Bible students call that the 400 silent years. And we can only begin to imagine, since we've never had a prophet in our country at all, but they've had prophets year after year God had sent. And now there is no more. Now God did not forget them, and God did not simply quit being God. He simply quit talking to them. He quit revealing what He was going to do. As Abraham told the rich man in Luke chapter 16, they have Moses and the prophets, let them read them. And that was the way God dealt with the people. And you can only begin to imagine what it was like, because as they tried to live as a people, God allowed one nation after another to come in and to rule over them. And never gave them another word of encouragement or another word of warning. And they suffered under Alexander the Great. When his kingdom broke up, they suffered under the Seleucid Empire and the Ptolemy Empire. And then the Romans became the dominant force. And the Romans set up camp in Jerusalem and Judea. And now the Jews, yet again, are not their own people. They're in bondage. But they held on to this hope that God had given them for years and years and years. For 400 years, they kept talking about and studying about and reading about this great day that God was going to send. And they had one good advantage. Back in the book of Daniel, God had told them from the Babylonian Empire during the fourth kingdom from there, God was going to raise up this king after David. And they were able to count to four. So they counted off the empire. And when you get down to the time of the Roman Empire, an amazing thing happens among them. They become excited. Not about the Romans, but about God. That we are now at the time where God said He was going to do something. And so they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're waiting. Year after year, things just kind of go on the way they did. In the spring of the year, you went up to Jerusalem for the Passover. In the fall of the year, you went up to Jerusalem for the Day of Atonement. And in between, you lived. Now, there were two old priests. A priest and his wife, but they were both out of the same tribe of Levi. So the story starts in verse 5. The days of Herod, king of Judea. What Luke wants you to see right away is this is not a Star Wars story. Long ago in a galaxy far, far away. What Luke does is he says, no, it was here, and this was the name of the ruler, and you can pinpoint the time. We know almost to the year when this was. And it was toward the end of the life of this man. He was not a good man, by the way. And he was king of Judea, but he was an Edomite, not a Jew. And so the Jewish people suffered. They allowed it because they couldn't do anything about it. But during that day, there was a priest named Zechariah. Of the division of Abijah. And he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Back when David was king, there were so many people that were out of the sons of Aaron that in order for them to officiate at the temple, David simply divided them up into 24 different divisions. And basically what he said was, okay, you get to be the serving of the priest two times a year. Well, that really wasn't everybody there. That was just that division. In the New Testament times, we guess, the best guess that I've been able to see from all these people that have tried to count the census and that, is they think that each one of these divisions had about 750 priests. That were active. And I got thinking about that. Two times a year, their division got called on. But there was only about five out of that 750 that got to do anything. And the other 745, they basically just watched like everybody else did. And so if five of them got to do it twice a year, that's 10 a year. And if you stayed a priest for 20 years, there's only 200 of you going to do it, and that left 550 of them that would never, ever serve in the temple. They would have lived their whole life, and they would have never gotten the privilege of doing this. And Zechariah now, year after year after year, He's gone up to the temple like he's supposed to do, and he doesn't get chosen. And so he goes again, and again, and again. I guess if you're an optimist, you would say, well, the odds are getting better each time. But most of us would simply be discouraged over that. And now he's an old man. I don't know how old that is, but they were old. And it says, verse 6, that they were both righteous before God. That doesn't mean that they were without sin. That word, for example, was used of Noah in the Old Testament. And in the book of Job, Job used it to describe the life of David. But it meant that they did what God wanted them to do. They were good people. They basically lived right. And they followed the law of God. And yet, God had not spoken to them in 400 years. God had not intervened visibly that they could see. And so, they were right before God. Verse 7 says, though, they had no child. Because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both advanced in years. You add heartache to heartache. He wanted to serve, and he never got picked. And she wanted a child, and they never had a child. And so the dreams of both of these godly people basically seemed to be not happening. But you know, I still like that. They were still righteous. When things don't go the way you would like them to go in your life, you keep doing what God tells you to do. And so they're doing what God wants them to do, but they're just having to deal with this. Now, while he was serving as priest before God, when his division was on duty, he got picked. Wow. According to the custom of the priesthood, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. As I said, there were only a few duties they could do, and so they would divvy those up, but they did it as fairly as they knew how to do it. And we really don't know how they did that, whether they chose straws or they put rocks in a hat and they had five colored ones and the rest were not and whatever, but they had a way. It's rather interesting, back in the book of Proverbs, God controls even the casting of the lots. And I don't know how that works. And I don't know how God worked this, but Zechariah got chosen. Now, all of your family is going to be there. Can you imagine the joy, the pride to go and to tell your family, it's my turn. And they are going to gather with all of the people together. And so, this is his one day. And there were so many that wanted to do that, they had an unwritten rule. Once. And that's it. If you ever got chosen, the next time, you were out. So this is his one time in all of his life that he gets to do this. So he's going to do it. And the whole multitude of the people were praying outside at the hour of incense. They burned incense in the morning and they burned it in the evening. The morning services usually were not very well attended, kind of the backwards for churches today. But the evening service was late afternoon. We would have called it afternoon and not evening. And what would happen is all of the people would gather outside of the temple and they would watch as this chosen priest had his special day. And so they're gathered out there and they're praying. He goes inside, and there appeared unto him an angel of the Lord standing on the right side of the altar of incense. Between where he was and the Holy of Holies, all of a sudden there appears an angel. The first time I read that, my first question, because I didn't know a lot about the Bible when I started all of this, how did he know it was an angel? One of the kids said, well, he had wings. But you know, when you read through the Bible and angels appeared unto men, they usually appeared as men. It doesn't describe them as having halos and wings. But out of nowhere, here's this man in the temple, not supposed to be there. You did not enter that temple unless you had a reason to be there. And for this angel to be there, well, he had a reason, but it was not the law. And Zechariah was troubled, and fear fell upon him. Luke's going to do this to you. Watch as you read through Luke. Every time one of them sees an angel, they have the same reaction. Scared to death. And a friend of mine went to visit an old lady one time and she said, yeah, let's go out and sit in the patio where the angels talk to me. And people today claim that they talk with angels all the time. And you know what? It's different. I don't know what they think they're doing. But as you read through the Bible, when they came face to face with those that were angels, there was this common reaction. And there was a common reaction to that. The angel said, don't fear. And that's what happens here. And so the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. And your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call his name John. And it's absolutely amazing to try to figure out what prayer. Some said, well, it was the prayer that he had offered as a young man that he and his wife would have a child. But now they're old, and so some think that he quit praying that. Some are a little more optimistic, and they think that even though they're old, he was still praying to have a child. I'm not too sure about that. Y'all just have to think about it. What they normally did when they entered into the altar in the temple and they prayed for the nation of Israel. And they prayed that God would again visit His people and God would bring the fulfillment of the promises of the Messiah that would come and would deliver them from their enemies. But we don't know exactly what the prayer was, but the angel said, your wife's going to have a child. Not only that, it's going to be a boy. And not only that, the angel said, you're going to name him John. And you will have joy and gladness. And many will rejoice at his birth. He will be great before the Lord. Over in chapter 7 of the book of Luke, Jesus is going to talk about John the Baptist and he's going to say, of all those born among men, none is greater than John the Baptist. For John the Baptist got to do what Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Amos never got to do. He got, first of all, to see the Messiah, and then he was the one that introduced and proclaimed, Jesus is the Christ. None of the other prophets got that privilege. But John is going to be great. But he must not drink wine or strong drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit, even from his mother's womb. Luke likes that little phrase, filled with the Spirit, and when Luke uses it, both here and over in the book of Acts, it always prefaces the concept of the person being inspired with a message from God. And John the Baptist is going to be one that is directed by God, even from his mother's womb. Yea, in fact, even before he was born. For when Mary was with child with Jesus and she comes and visits, John jumps or leaps or kicks inside of Elizabeth's womb. So that John, even before he was born, is already revealing and showing God's purpose. What a great promise. He will turn many of the children of Israel to the Lord their God. In that day as in now, Israel was not faithful to God. Many of them, like the Pharisees, were religious, but not right with God. Many of them were like the Sadducees, and they were religious, but they didn't believe the Word of God. And what John was going to do was he was going to turn the hearts of the people back to God. And it says he will go before him in the spirit and the power of Elijah. That strange old man back in the Old Testament. Who came during the time that Israel was almost completely gone after Baal. And Elijah stood and waged a spiritual war with the prophets of Baal and pulled Israel back from the brink of destruction. And now John the Baptist is going to come in the spirit and the power of this great prophet. And he too will turn Israel around and turn them back unto the Lord. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just to make ready for the Lord a people that are prepared. Now, I don't think this is what Zechariah prayed for, by the way. He may have prayed for a child, but not this child. He may have prayed that they had a child, but to hope that he would be the promised one of the book of Malachi, that he would be the promised one to be the forerunner to or announce this Messiah. And besides that, he's too old. His wife's too old. So he looks at the angel and he says, "How? How shall I know this? For I'm an old man and my wife is advanced in years." Now, I don't know the difference. Go down, if you will, if you're still there. When the angel tells Mary she's going to have a child when she's not married, she said, "How will this be since I am a virgin?" And here's one of the problems of a written book. What was their tone of voice when they said that? I don't know. What was the look on their face when they said that? And I don't know. Here's what I know. The angel who was standing next to Zechariah says, "Since you don't believe me, here's what's going to happen." And when Mary said almost exactly the same words, there is not one word saying that she didn't believe. So there was something in their voice or in their posture or in their face. And Zechariah gave himself away. I've often wondered if maybe he laughed. Yeah, like that's going to happen. Or maybe it was just incredulous. That's unbelievable. It can't happen. Do you know an interesting thing happens? When God was going to start this great movement that ended up being the Jewish people, do you remember the story of Abraham? And his wife was barren and didn't have a child? And then when you get to the book of Judges and they're having so many problems and God is going to start a new period, He raises up Samuel, whose mother was barren. And then as you come on down in the story, you begin seeing that God used that. And so He's going to do it again. And so something brand new is happening. And you know what? This probably was not lost on the Jewish people. They knew their Old Testament stories and they knew these stories of the barren in their old age that had a child as the promise of God. And so God now has done what they've been waiting for. 400 years they've been waiting for God to step in again. And God steps in a very recognizable fashion to the Jewish people. And so Zechariah and Elizabeth are going to have a child. Now the angel said, "I am Gabriel." We know of two angels' names out of the host of heaven. Michael the archangel and Gabriel. And we had met Gabriel years ago in the book of Daniel when he announced that a period of time would go by and then God would set up this great kingdom. And the same angel that announced that to Daniel now has appeared and he says, you will have this child. The days are now coming. I am Gabriel, he said. I stand in the presence of God and I was sent to speak to you and bring you this good news. And behold, you will be silent and unable to speak until the day that these things take place because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time. Later on, when we get to the bottom of this story, and they're going to name the baby, they get Zacharias and they sign to Zacharias. What should we name the baby? And I always found that funny. He was deaf. Or why would they sign? And then I began looking at this particular word in the original language. It was used for both. And oftentimes, the one that was deaf never did learn to talk. And so they were basically mute and deaf. But now that poses a little problem. Because you see, verse 21, the people were waiting for Zechariah. And now they're beginning to wonder, what's taken so long? I've wondered if they were already beginning to discuss who was going to go in after him. Something must have happened in there. But you don't just go into the temple, even if something did happen. That's a big thing. So they're beginning to wonder. And if I was Zechariah, I think I'd have just stayed in the temple. Because you can't tell anybody what took place. And so he finally comes out. And when he came out, he was unable to speak to them. And they realized that he had seen something, a vision in the temple. And he kept making signs to them. Now, y'all remember they didn't have American Sign Language? So he couldn't do the alphabet for them? I thought I would do this tonight. I was going to call on Michael back there to give us a charade. How would you sign to these people that you had seen an angel in there? How are you going to sign to your wife, honey, you're going to have a child? How are you going to communicate this? And so he comes out, and I'm going to tell you what, he gave it a shot. And all I can picture is gestures and pointing and whatever he may have done. Wouldn't you give a nickel to see that? But they don't understand. And the time of the service is ended, he goes home. And after these days, his wife Elizabeth conceived. And for 5 months, she kept herself hidden, saying, thus the Lord has done for me in the days when he looked upon me to take away my reproach from among the people. And nobody knows exactly what was going on in her mind. Was she embarrassed? We don't know. Was she waiting to make sure this wasn't just a sickness? Was it not just something weird going on with her body? I mean, if you're an old lady and you don't just go the first month and begin telling everybody. We don't know. But she now realizes one thing. God has taken away the reproach. She not only will have a child, she's going to have the child. Second importance to the Messiah, but the forerunner. You know, that would have been an interesting 5 months, would it not, if you were Zacharias? That would have been an interesting 5 months if you were Elizabeth. How did they communicate? Now, one of the things we know is they did communicate. For when we see them talking about how they're going to name the child, she knew what the angel had told Zacharias in the temple. She knew the name John. So they did something. And Zacharias could write. So go down to verse 57. 9 months go by, the time came for Elizabeth to give birth, and she bore a son. The angel was right on. Her neighbors and relatives heard the Lord had shown great mercy to her, and they rejoiced with her. And on the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child. According to the Old Testament law, they were still doing what the law said. And on the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to call the child Zechariah after his father. That was a very common thing then, just as it is now. And Elizabeth said, and I wish I could hear how she said this, no. That's how I hear it. I hear her saying this emphatically. No, that is not what his name is going to be. His name is John. And they said, well, none of your relatives are called by that name. And they made signs to his father. That's what I was saying. He not only couldn't speak, apparently he couldn't hear. So they made signs unto the father inquiring what he wanted him to be called. And he asked for a writing tablet. And I like what he wrote. He didn't write, he will be called John. He wrote, his name is John. You know why? That had been settled in the temple 9 months earlier. It was not a matter of choosing a name for this child. God Himself had given direction, this is His name. And that ended the discussion. And so it's not, we will call Him John, His name is John. And then they marveled. And immediately his mouth was opened and his tongue loosed and he spoke, blessing God. I can never read this without thinking of an old man back in Oklahoma. And I was teaching in Bible class one time and it had nothing to do with this story and he asked a simple question. How do you define what a pronoun refers to? When you see he in a text, how do you decide who the he is? And he had decided that you always do it by the nearest antecedent. Y'all remember your English? And the nearest antecedent to that is the name John. And his old man had decided that that meant this child that was 8 days old, his tongue was loose and he began speaking. And I shook my head and I went, nobody read that story that way. Did y'all ever read it that way? You will from now on. But I want you to know when you read it that way, just shake your head and go, that's not it. By the way, he missed the rule. It's the nearest possible antecedent. And the nearest possible antecedent was the person that could not speak, and that was Zacharias. But now Zacharias for 9 months has not said a word, and the moment he wrote, his name is John, he could speak. And I've often wondered, what do you think those conversations were like from that point on? What would have been the first question you would have asked this man? And you know, we have none of that story. But fear came upon all the neighbors and all those things were talked about through all of the hill country of Judea. And all who heard them laid them up in their hearts saying, what then shall this child be? And now for another 30 years, they're waiting for John the Baptist to arrive preaching a baptism of repentance and pointing out Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. But you know what? It started. And they've looked for 400 years and it's here. And the people now are excited, they're wondering, they're thinking, and God has stepped back into the course of history, and God is about to do another great thing. The greatest thing. So, what in the world do we do with this story? You know, as a preacher, that's one of the things I always ask when I read these types of stories. What do we do with that? And I'm going to tell you, number one, You can trust God absolutely. I don't care if it was 400 years ago or 900 years ago. If God says, this is what I'm going to do, He will do that. Think about this story when we sing that song in our songbook, In His Time. And remember, it's His time, not mine. And so 400 years and how many generations went by, and when the time was fulfilled, God did what He said He would do. Second thing, when God says, this is what will happen, we need to believe that. Accept it. That was Zechariah's problem. The angel said, you're going to have a child. And he said, I don't think so. But who are we to question what God has revealed? And we need the faith that Mary had, not the unbelief that Zechariah showed. Third, sometimes we are like Zacharias. And sometimes our faith just kind of wavers on that. But you know what? He was not rejected for that. He spent 9 months not being able to talk. But he wasn't rejected as one of God's people. In fact, I skipped over a part where he himself was a prophet and spoke by inspiration. But you know, the greatest thing about all of this is that starts the story of Jesus. And God is going to be there. And we're going to see now the greatest epic in humanity. I like these stories. Sometimes a little hard to know what to do with them. But when you read through that, just read and think what it would have been like to be Zacharias. Or Elizabeth. And if you're here tonight, I'll tell you, you can make application this way. God said, if you will believe and be baptized, you can be saved. You may not understand how that works, but that's what God said. And if you'll put your faith in God and do what God said, I guarantee God will be faithful to what He has said. The problem is never God. The problem is us in not trusting Him enough. If you trust Him tonight, arise, be baptized. We invite you to come as together we stand and sing.